You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Many are familiar with the large presence of Canadian mining operations throughout Latin America, but perhaps less well known is the large presence of Canadian mining activity on the African continent. Africa now accounts for 17% of Canadian mining assets abroad. It is the largest source of mining investment among African countries after South Africa. According to one report, Canadian companies also make up the most significant group involved in violence, environmental degradation, and human rights violations. Bonnie Campbell is a professor at the Faculty of Political Science and Law at the University of Quebec at Montreal and has been heading up a research group on mining activities in Africa for the past 10 years. She is the author of the recent book, Mining in Africa, Regulation and Development, and we reached her today by phone in Montreal. Good morning, Bonnie, and welcome.
Morning. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. We want to talk about Canadian mining in Africa. Can you just briefly describe sort of the situation in Africa with regards to mining?
Well, to be put in a nutshell, the African continent is extremely rich in minerals, not just petroleum, but resources which our economies need, bauxite, very, very key rare metals, iron ore, as well, of course, we hear a great deal about the gold and the diamond questions. But the paradox is this wealth, for example, a country like Guinea, which has been one of the ones 160th or 70th on the human index, development index, it's a country which has got about half of the world's deposits of high-grade bauxite. Now, the question is, why are these resources, which are present and have been developed and extracted for the last 20 to 50 years, not leading to sustainable growth? And I guess it has a lot to do with the way mining has been operating in that continent. Just the last thing, there's enormous diversity between countries, sites, minerals, so it's extremely difficult to generalize. But there are patterns we can talk about to explain what's going on and what Canadian companies are doing too.
What are Canadian companies doing in Africa?
Well, like most companies, but the difference is that Canadian investment is the most important source of foreign capital. So we're at the top of the list everywhere, and it's just booming. Like in the last, from 2005, where we had about $6 billion investment, we've gone up 5 years later, 2010, to over $23 billion, like that's about four times. So this is the way it's just expanding exponentially. And what's very important is to see under what conditions this is going on. Obviously, Canadian companies, like those from Australia or South Africa, are on this bandwagon of being able to invest in countries which were indebted, which were poor, which were encouraged to open up to investment, which are very encouraging, so give a lot of incentives, and have rolled back their own forms of control and have regulatory frameworks which are very, very favorable to companies. So this has allowed companies to go in, not pay taxes for the first years, not employ local labor, not use local inputs. And unfortunately, this is a very widespread pattern, and countries in Africa, and in fact the Economic Commission for Africa, now wants very fundamental changes about that. But before that comes about, there are other kinds of problems about the violations that go on because of this environment, because the states have been rolled back and are weak and sometimes don't have regular frameworks, for example, over dust particles or different kinds of sound emissions or incapacity to follow up if there's cyanide spills or not the proper regulation. If companies displace people, then there's not sometimes the mechanisms to allow people, and I've seen this on the ground, where people get moved, but then they don't have a livelihood to keep going in a new place that they've been moved to. So there are many, many kinds of problems because the situation in Africa is conducive to these kinds of things happening.
Why are so many of these companies that are operating in Canada or in Africa based in Canada?
That's a really critically important point. Is Canada, being a mining country, has historically encouraged mining activity with all sorts of legislation we have concerning our industry. But that extends, so the Canadian rules allow for all sorts of things which encourage companies to be registered on Canadian stock exchanges. As you probably know, 1,000 mining companies are listed on stock exchanges, and Canadian mining companies, or mining companies from all over the world, have interest in about 8,000 exploration and mining projects. So what we're doing, we're attracting companies which register on our stock exchanges, have facilities on our stock exchanges, can raise capital more easily, and if they're Canadian companies, then on apart from that, they can get different kinds of public support, councillor support, export credits from the export EDC, which helps exporters, give some loans to facilitate their exports and using Canadian equipment. And we now have something which is new, that Canadian aid funds are actually going to be used to support the what is called corporate social responsibility. There's projects with companies do around their sites to get the communities to support them. Now, it's Canadian aid funds, and some of us are completely in disagreement with that, because why should Canadian aid be supporting mining operations rather than local government long-standing programs which will be more equitable and sustainable? So, to the question, why Canadian companies? I think the public support that Canadian companies, even we have former prime ministers like Monsieur Chrétien, who lobbies for Canadian companies. Now, governments have African governments, when they negotiate, if they're negotiating with a Canadian prime minister, that changes the clout, the capacity of Canadian companies to come in, compared, and that's why on the African continent, Canadian companies are now the most important source of foreign investment outside of South African companies.
You talked just a moment ago about this shift of aid to corporate social responsibility kind of programs. How does that affect communities?
Well, the danger there, like local communities, of course, in situations, think of Guinea or Mali, when a company comes in and says, okay, we're going to support, going to give water or schooling to the community around, I mean, no one could be against that. But the problem is, what happens when the company leaves? I've got an example of a Canadian company in Ghana, which got Canadian support, but it sold to the Chinese. Now, who's going to look after that project? And who's responsible for the project? And what happens in terms of the sustainability of the project? And if it's not worked into a local development plan and sustainable public policies, it's neither equitable or sustainable to do that kind of thing. Many of us are very concerned that it's not CEDA's mandate to be doing that kind of thing, because CEDA has a mandate to be longer-term sustainable economic and social development, working with local governments, not with Canadian companies.
Now, you sat on an advisory committee named by the federal government to publish a report on Canadian mining several years ago. The report made recommendations for policy reform and that would bring Canadian mining companies in line with a stricter standard of operation. What kinds of recommendations were in that report?
Well, that was a really interesting experience, because the advisory committee named by the government was half industry and half non-governmental, or we had two academics. We were there as the academics. Well, first of all, there's some ambiguity about what are the standards that Canadian companies should adhere to. So we're very progressive in our idea of a cumulative setting up of Canadian standards based on existing international standards, the things that companies should adhere to, human rights, ILO, labor standards, etc. And it should be absolutely essential. Second thing was reporting obligations. We have to have a way of finding out what's happening, and why not ask companies to. This is something we discussed. It wasn't in the report, but it could be very logical to have reporting obligations on Canadian stock exchanges, so when people want to invest in a mining company, they know the human rights environmental record of the company or labor record. And there was also a call for an independent ombudsman, because when there are complaints, the problem is those who seek remedy are in a very weak position to seek redress. And so having an independent ombudsman look in, and if the company is declared not responsible, this process, as Norway does, could be very serious, be done. And it's a way of clearing any kind of unfair complaint a company might receive, but it also was a chance of seeing that in case of non-compliance, there'd be a public mechanism which would allow this to happen, and we got the report of the industry representatives there. And one of the very, very key things, in case of non-compliance to the Canadian standards, the CSR standards, then Canadian support for the company should be withdrawn. And this is something that's been asked for since 2005 in a report of the Standing Committee on Foreign Affairs. It's something so logical. Why would a company which is violating human rights in a country receive and not be told by the Canadian government that we're going to withdraw support for non-compliance? But unfortunately, as you know, 2 years later, when a report came out, the essence of these, I think, very level-headed, and we worked 10 months to get and traveled all over, even to Vancouver, to get public opinion and to think through what was realistic and in this cumulative process to move Canadian standards to a par where other countries are. But as you know, the government did not take this seriously. It took 2 years to bring out recommendations, which were a very, very pale reflection of what had been recommended.
You talked briefly about the standards in Norway and in other countries. Can you talk a little bit more about what those kinds of standards look like?
Yeah, well, that's very, very interesting things, which show that it's completely possible. The OECD guidelines on the operations of transnational corporations have something called the national contact point. That means in each country, like we have one and Sweden has one, if there's a complaint, people who have this complaint can bring it forward to a national contact point. Well, ours has been complete in Canada, non-operative. When people try and bring complaints from the Democratic Republic of the Congo about the operation of Canadian companies, there's no follow-up, and this has happened time and time again. A country like Sweden, if they have a complaint, I know because the Swedish Foreign Office contacted me about a complaint, and it was followed up in the country. In fact, it was in Ghana, and the company was completely cleared. But if you have these mechanisms that have been thought through internationally, OECD, and Canada's been a laggard in terms of implementing it, and that's why this idea of the ombudsman was a way to try and make sure that something happened when there are these complaints. And I mean, there are dozens and dozens and dozens of complaints which could come up, but there's nowhere for them to be heard. The Norwegian experience is perhaps even more interesting. They have something called the Council on Ethics for Government, the Pension Fund. And this means, because as you know, there's a huge pension fund from the oil revenue, before they invest, they want to, as a government, invest responsibly. So when they have complaints, they send people, whom we met in various of the meetings of these roundtables, they have people they send out to the country. And if a company is found in violation of the local government legislation, or even worse, violating human rights, environmental degradation, etc., then Norway has a procedure whereby the company is excluded from what they call the investment universe of the government pension fund. And it's very interesting because if you go on their very seriously done annual report, you'll find several Canadian companies operating in areas where other Canadian companies are, but the Norwegian government has decided to exclude these our companies from investment from their pension fund because of the violations that these Canadian companies have been found to be responsible for.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
I have been speaking with Bonnie Campbell. She is a longtime researcher on Canadian mining practices in Africa and a professor at the University of Quebec at Montreal, and she is author of the recent book, Mining in Africa, Regulation and Development.